All right, good evening, councilors. It's 5 o'clock. We'll go ahead and we'll start our interview. Tonight's interview is going to be the Airport Authority, and our candidate tonight is Sandy Hoff. I'd like to welcome you to the lectern. Come on up. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Councilors, good evening.
Good evening. We just have about 7 questions to ask, and then I'll open it up to councilors to see if they have any follow-up questions. So we'll start with, why don't you start with your name and a little bit about yourself?
Is Sanford Hoff. I go by Sandy. I live at 2881 Moose Mountain Drive. I say Duluth, Minnesota, but just on the outside of the Duluth city limits. Married to my great wife, Natalie. 3 kids, Daniel, Braden, and Callie, and been a resident of Duluth most of my life.
Thank you for that. As far as the Airport Authority Board, do you have any personal or financial interests, direct or indirect, with the Airport Authority, or are you engaged in any capacity where a conflict of interest may arise? Thank you. Please give us a brief outline of your educational work experience and how your background will benefit the Airport Authority.
Sure. I've got a degree in business administration from right here in Duluth, UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm a certified general licensed real estate appraiser, a licensed Minnesota broker, and I've been doing business in Duluth for 37 years. Time really flies. We have multiple business interests. Our primary business is F.I. Salter Commercial Real Estate. We're a diversified commercial firm, specializes in sales, leasing, management, and development in the region. We have a number of other business interests. We own primary owners of the Rustic Inn on the North Shore, the greatest pie in the world, so please stop by. We have a vertical stack marina on Lake Vermilion up in Tower, Minnesota, and we own multiple resorts throughout the region, either by ourselves or with other partners. So a very diverse business background. So I think that probably addresses my experience.
So thank you. So why are you interested in serving on this board?
I thought about that question, and it really comes down to 2 passions. One is for our community. Over my career here, I've probably served on 17 boards. I've been very privileged to chair many of those. I have a passion for helping to create success and moving our community forward. Secondly, I have a passion for aviation. I'm a private pilot. I have a Cirrus with some partners that we fly. I've flown out of Duluth quite a bit, and then I also fly out of Sky Harbor, the other Duluth Airport Authority venue. We fly float planes out of Sky Harbor. So I'm intimately familiar with the aviation community. Many years ago, a few gentlemen and I started Lake Superior Helicopters. And I'm very proud that business, I've now sold my interest, but Eric Munson, who manages that, does a terrific job, and it's educating the next generation of both fixed wing and rotorcraft pilots right now. So I'm very proud that I was part of starting that and getting that company launched. And so, and then I look at the Airport Authority and the great work that Tom Werner and his team are doing at the airport. And it's fun to be part of things that are successful. And I think that's another reason I'd like to be a part of the Airport Authority.
Thank you for that. Do you foresee any personal scheduling conflicts which may prevent you from attending regular meetings of the Airport Authority? Sometimes we have difficulties, sometimes we can't make quorum, voting can't happen if people aren't able to attend.
Sure. I don't. I've thought about that before I agreed to be here, so thank you.
What do you consider, and you've named several already, but what do you consider your personal strength that you'd bring to the board?
A broad-based business experience over 37 years in Duluth. I do believe that having the privilege to serve on, it's been more than 17 boards, you really learn a lot, and you learn to respect different viewpoints. These have been very diverse boards, from the North Shore Inline that we helped to start, Woodland Hills, the Duluth Chamber, the list goes on. And I'm always impressed with the thoughtful insights that different opinions bring to the table and that I can learn from. And so I think it's strength that I like to listen, I like to learn, and then render an opinion or influence a discussion.
You mentioned all the boards you've been on. Are you presently serving on any other board and commission that you're an active member, and if so, which one?
Yeah, I've been working hard. I thought I wouldn't do more, but when this opportunity came up, I couldn't pass it up. I am currently on the Great Lakes Aquarium Board. And again, because Jay Walker and the team there at the Great Lakes Aquarium are rocking it right now. Record attendance. Isn't it exciting what's going on there? So just the Great Lakes Aquarium Board.
And final question. Is there anything else you'd like to add concerning your possible appointment to the board?
No, I think it's a privilege to be asked to have this interview and to potentially be on the board. I'm excited about the future of the Airport Authority, and just thank you for the opportunity.
We'll now open it up to questions from the council. First in the queue is Councilor Owl.
Mayor Randorf, thank you so much, Mr. Hoff, for coming and interviewing for this board position. I had the honor of serving on the Great Lakes Aquarium Board with you. No longer on there. My council appointment has changed, but just amazing work, and I loved seeing the dynamic discussions we had there.
That's now, so.
Thank you. My question for you was if funding wasn't an issue, what are some of the ideas or dreams that you might have or visions you might have for the Duluth Airport Authority that you might bring to the table?
It wasn't a criteria. That would be just spectacular. Certainly, we need to increase traffic and have more passengers. It seems we have about 300,000 people that fly out of there commercially each year. Of course, the 148th Fighter Wing is critical to our region. And I think diversifying the flight school even up there is terrific because we need more pilots. So I think the tower project that I've been reading about is going to be a tremendous benefit. We need to keep modernizing technology. We have a terrific airport in terms of infrastructure with a 10,000 plus foot runway. And that's a real plus to take care of the big aircraft that want to fly through this area. So I could go on, but.
Is your passion, and I would love to continue the conversation at a later time about diversifying and outreach for pilots and aviators. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Councilor Owl, next in the queue is Councilor Mayo.
President Randorf, thank you, Mr. Hoff, for coming and for expressing interest in this position. I think you have a lot of experience that'll suit you well on this board. I had a question if you have some thoughts, if you want to share about the direct to Denver connection. I know that's been in the works for a while for our airport, and if you have thoughts about how you as a board member would approach it, or if you have, how you would help in that situation, kind of along the lines of Councilor Owl's question with recruiting more pilots, I think is the main issue there.
Thank you for the question. So first of all, every time I see Tom Werner, I say, do we have Denver yet? Do we have Denver yet? I'm a skier, and I think that would just be spectacular. And for our economic development, to be connected to a city like Denver would just be tremendous. I'm not sure I know what I don't know yet about the Airport Authority. I've got to settle in and learn about how I could influence that. I believe a direct to Denver flight would be outstanding, and I'm surprised, frankly, we don't have it yet. But I know the staff up there has been working on it. So I don't know that I know how I could influence that beyond being a real passionate supporter of it, because I've been hoping for that for a long time.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us expect you to have all the answers, but as long as you're excited about that conversation, I think that's what's most important. So,
conflict if I have to ski, no.
Thank you.
Councilor Mayo, any final questions for Sandy Hoff? All right, seeing none in the queue, we'd like to thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you for dedicating your time and your talent to the Airport Authority. They're lucky to have you. This will be an item. It's item number 6. It'll be voted on Monday.
Appreciate all you do.
All right, we will reconvene again at for agenda session at 5:15. All right, we'll begin in one more minute. All right, good evening, everyone. We will start our agenda session tonight. And we'll start with our first item. It's under Councillor Forsman. He unfortunately could not be here tonight, so I'll go ahead and read that in for him. It's item number 5. Resolution 266 is a resolution approving the budget for the fiscal year May 1st, 2024 to April 30th, 2025 in the amount of $8,089,724 for the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority. That's item 5. I'll open that up for councilor questions. Seeing none in the queue, we'll move on. Item 6, Vice President Timonic could not be here tonight. Reading in for Vice President will be Councilor Kennedy.
Reading in for Vice President Timonic on under personnel, item number 6, 240, resolution confirming the appointment of Sandy Hoff to the Duluth Airport Authority. Item number 7, resolution 255, resolution approving proposed specifications for the new civil service classification of senior applications administrator and specifying contract benefits for the same. I'm moving to number 8, resolution 256. Resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of water plant maintenance coordinator, including a title change to water system maintenance foreperson and specifying the contract benefits for the same. Item number 9, resolution 257, approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of instrument specialist. Item number 10, resolution 258, approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classifications of instrument technician. Item number 11, resolution 261, confirming appointments to the Duluth boards and commissions. Item number 12 is resolution 275, confirming new appointments to City of Duluth boards and commissions. There are two of those.
Yes, thank you so much.
I did not read one twice.
Councillor Kennedy, yes, some are reappointments and the other one is new appointments. Those are the difference between those two. Mm-hmm. We'll open up for questions on items 6 through 12. And I have first in the queue is Councillor Owl.
Thank you, President Randorf. I had a question for administration. I just want to check back in about our FTEs and what the FTE breakdown looks like for each department and which departments are struggling to meet, to bring in folks for different roles. I know we had a gap about 35 last year with mainly being with the police department. So just wanting to get caught up on those numbers, and that will be my first question.
Thank you, President Randorf, Councillor Wall. Our FTE issues kind of vary across departments. I think police is one of our primary ones. We have certain amounts. You know, we're undertaking a lot of efforts to hire in new officers. We also have programs to get lateral people coming in from departments across the country. We are still under our top optimal force amount, and we continue to work on that and trying to get there with that. We also have some openings in our public works area. Some of that is through normal retirements. Others are people going to the state or other locations. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Some is we have people out on disability, so we have openings. Libraries are pretty good. Our internal departments like finance, HR, IT are pretty good. Fire is probably in a little bit better shape than police, but they've got a handful of openings they're working on as well. So all in all, I think, you know, we're recognizing the challenges in this post-COVID labor market, which is much more of an employee-favored market than an employer-favored market. That's really changed since before COVID. And it impacts us as well. I mean, we've lost people to the state. We've lost inspectors, building inspectors to the state. And it's a some of that is a straight compensation issue, that the comp difference is surprising, and they can work from home. And so I think overall we're doing okay. We've got a number of strategies in place to try to address them.
Public safety was one of my primary concerns too. Last year I had pushed for additional housing inspector, understanding that we're almost 3,000 housing inspections behind, and knowing that it's really because we don't have enough folks in fire to really do the work. Please let us know on how council can support really getting the word out and pushing for those positions. My follow-up question, I was curious about, actually this might be for council too, about what's happening with the boards and commissions, kind of the realignment task force. And I was wondering if we could get an update on that.
Thank you again, President Randolph, Councilor Wall. Internally, we are, and Ben Van Tassel, who is here, he's sort of heading up a lot of our internal look on boards and commissions, evaluating what we're doing and what openings we have and where we're short. And, you know, we have something like 39 boards and commissions. St. Cloud has 20. Rochester has 20 some. We have a lot of boards and commissions. And the way we think of them are, we've got probably a third of them that we'd say they have a clear purpose. They're fully staffed, or generally fully staffed. Staffed, I mean, with appointed commissioners and on there, and they do good work, and they're, you know, chugging along great. We've got another group that are sort of okay. We're having a hard time finding and filling all the posts, but they're functioning and they're doing what they need to be doing. It's just we have to continually work to get people to get on board. And then we got another group that we just can't get people on board. They're not really doing much. They're not focusing much attention on anything. And it's incredibly hard, if we can at all, get people to get on them. So the thing we're doing is internal. We've spoken to President Randolph about getting additional counselor engagement on that and determining, you know, what council, because these really are council prerogatives, if you will, to help assess what do we do with all these boards and commissions, do we need to scale back, and how can we make sure we get the right people we need to do that. It's a struggle at the moment.
I was on the modernization task force, and I'm sad that that's no longer active right now, but I understand that there's some realignment happening. But if there's any support needed, I would be willing to support in any way I can with the boards and commissions realignment too.
As a follow-up question, thank you, Councillor Owl. As a follow-up question to that, Mr. Montgomery, what is the next step in the council action you would like to see in order for us to review and assess? I mean, are you talking about asking to dismantle some boards that maybe aren't either able to staff it to the levels that need to be and function in a way that's productive?
President Randolph, I think what we'll do is bring forward sort of our internal work, what we've identified, and then look to council to say, who would you like involved in sharing in that assessment? And council can look at that assessment from your perspective as to what you find productive out of boards and commissions. And some of it may be looking at whether we either eliminate or there's opportunities to consolidate some very similar related boards and consolidating them into one and just having subcommittees. There's a number of ways it could be addressed, and I think council, we'd look for that assistance in kind of looking at what's the optimal structure and organization for boards and commissions. The important thing is we want to get people that have good quality backgrounds, are interested in serving, and willing to serve, so that the work necessary to be done with these can in fact get done.
Excellent. Sounds good. So I will wait for an indication from you on when you're ready for a work group. And then I'll open it up to any counselors that are interested in being in that work group. Please reach out to me, and we'll be ready to mobilize when you're ready. Thank you so much. Next in the queue, we have Councillor Swenson.
Thank you. Randorf. My question is on Resolution 261 and I guess 275. Just more clarification on how we decipher who is interviewed in front of council and who is not. Because I've noticed we've had interviews and then some we are just appointing.
Oh, I can answer that.
Thank you.
We have like an internal list that we use. It's usually authorities, all of our authorities we interview for, Planning Commission and Civil Service and Utilities Commission. And it's there's no really requirement. It's just something that has just historically always been done.
Montgomery.
Thank you, Alyssa, for that. And that is one of the things that this work group could evaluate, saying, should we structure a clear indication of what shouldn't be interviewed? Again, it's sort of just practice that we're doing, past practice. And so we can certainly evaluate that past practice and say, does this make sense? Should it be something else? And can we put different parameters around that whole process so it's clear? If it's this type of thing, we do this. If it's that type of thing, we do that. And that would be completely within the purview of any work group, I think.
Montgomery, because the council still gets the ability to vote up or down on all of the seats. Any questions on items 6 through 12 before we move on? Seeing none in the queue, we'll move on to Councilor Aneffu, Planning and Economic Development, item 13.
Resolution 259, resolution authorizing the proper city officials to enter into an amendment to a joint powers agreement with and accept a total amount not to exceed $49,376.08 from the state of Minnesota acting through its Department of Employment and Economic Development to provide weekly required reception and career lab duties for vocational rehabilitation for the period of January 1, 2024 through December 31st, 2024. Resolution 264, resolution authorizing transfer of $14,507,890 and assignment of two contracts to the Duluth Economic Development Authority for affordable housing or economic development purposes. Item 15, resolution 268, resolution authorizing the purchase of real property from James D. McCauley in Lincoln Park neighborhood for $5,000. And if I may,
yes.
On number 14, I think my question is, that is the ARPA funds, is that correct? That weren't used?
Yeah, this relates to ARPA funding. And the big picture is, under the ARPA rules, we have some deadlines. All ARPA funds have to be obligated by 12/31/24 and have to be expended by 12/31/26. So the purpose of this is to make sure, and because of some of the rules around ARPA, the city can move the equivalent dollars from the city to DETA along with the related contracts. There's two contracts that are executed. There are two that don't have contracts at this point, but move all those contracts and the dollars to DETA, and then the city will take the ARPA dollars and reimburse the money we've sent to DETA from the general fund. So it's a way to keep the ARPA within the city money, so that we can report that we're all done with ARPA and report that we've expended everything and move the dollars over that otherwise would have been problematic to get done within these time limits over to DETA, where there are no, the ARPA money has been left in the city, equivalent general fund dollars have been moved over to DETA, and they can finish out those projects in whatever timely manner it takes without having the burden of those deadlines imposed.
So one follow-up question, are we intending to use some of that money to support some of the housing projects that are underway that maybe already have existing ARPA dollars and are struggling to cross the finish line, such as over budget or anything like that? Is that part of the intent or ideas behind using this? I'd hate to see another half-developed project.
Right. President Randolph, Councilor Nephew, there are four items. One, Wadena West, that's Center City behind Menards down in West Duluth. That's just getting underway. There's $2.75 million of ARPA dollars tied to that. That's under contract. So that contract, along with those dollars, will go to continue the work on that project. There is the Merge Residence, that's 80 units by Wheeler Wade, that's $4 million in ARPA. That project is not, it's under contract, but it is not currently underway, and they have a deadline of July. So if they get underway by July, those $4 million will stay with that project and continue on. If they don't get underway by July, then there will be the question of will there be an extension or do those dollars get pulled back? So that's the two that are under contract. Then there's One Roof, Brayview. That's at 5th and 5th East. That's 80. That's senior living and a daycare. That one is not under contract with One Roof yet, because it was contingent on them obtaining state housing tax credits, which they just have recently done. That's been completed. So now that they've met that issue, we will be going to contract with them. DETA will be now, but going with it, and there is $3.8 million of ARPA dollars tied to that one. So that one will get underway once that's contracted, now that they have the tax credits. And that leaves $3.9 million currently unallocated. And per this resolution, that would be for affordable housing or economic development.
Well, I think my question wasn't answered. So of that 3.9 million of the projects that are currently underway that have ARPA dollars in them, I know some of them have went over budget because construction is expensive right now. Can we use those dollars to make sure that those projects that are currently being built across the finish line properly, like direct more ARPA dollars that way?
Councilor Nephew, I mean, we often look at a number of sources to close the gap when projects start running beyond what it should, and we've got a lot of flexibility to do a lot of things. This would be another bucket of potential that could be used, but it wouldn't necessarily be the only bucket that's able to be used to make sure those projects get over the.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Follow-up question to that. I think what we're seeing here is the word or economic development purposes. I think the majority of this council debated and voted on 19.2 being for affordable housing. We know this resolution is really a bookkeeping resolution, and yet it does leave an opening for the money to be used for something other than affordable housing, and it looks like maybe 3.9 or more, depending on if merge happens or not. Would the council be open to a friendly amendment to just remove the words or economic development, and then we'll have affordable housing, and that way we know what's been decided and debated is done. This is just a bookkeeping situation, and we know the monies that two-thirds of this seated council agreed upon will be used for such. Are we open to that?
Is that a question to me or a question to council?
It would be a friendly amendment, meaning just adjusting the language here, or would the council prefer we just create a new resolution so we can re-debate this?
President Randolph, from administration's perspective, our preference would be the or. We have already spent 17 some million dollars in just with ARPA money on affordable projects. We've done a number of affordable projects in town. A lot of money has been spent. And this certainly could be tied into affordable projects, but it also could be used for, you know, generating further economic developments, because ultimately we need economic activity in order to support affordable housing. I mean, we can't just do affordable housing. We have to do both, because otherwise we don't have the economic base to support it going forward. So we would prefer that flexibility. Council will certainly have the opportunity to address this at subsequent dates as projects come forward to determine whether council feels that's an appropriate project or not. But from an administration's view, we see the value of affordable housing. Absolutely. A lot of that's been done. A lot of it is still in stages, and some is underway that won't even be tied to ARPA dollars. We also know the need for economic development to support our ability to do affordable housing. So they're linked very much, and so our view is, you know, we'll follow council, but our preference is remaining that flexibility and have that discussion at a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery. We do have more questions in the queue. We'll start with Councilor Owl.
First, I just want to thank all the staff that I've had conversations with already. Dave Montgomery, Attorney Freilich, Chad Ronchetti, Clerk Johnson, Jen Carlson from Finance. I really appreciate all of you taking my questions and like just all the phone calls from today. And I'm understanding that, you know, this is important because we need to transfer the funds to save the ARPA funds so we can still continue to do affordable housing developments throughout. And I've mentioned this already, my concern really is the language of this resolution. I really appreciated Councilor Nephew and Councilor President Randorf's questions about the original intent that council passed previously, which the original intent with these ARPA funds, the $19.5 million, to really go for affordable housing, because we know affordable housing is a problem in Duluth, and we know also homelessness and individuals unsheltered is also a concern in the city of Duluth. And we also know that having funds go towards affordable housing or addressing homelessness and encampments is very rare to come by. So I guess that's where my hesitancy is coming from, seeing the language where I understand that economic development and affordable housing go hand in hand. But DITA also has, I'm assuming, unrestricted funds that could be used to be creative with, right? So I guess I'm uncomfortable with the idea of having what the community and the council of the past had originally intended to go into this. And I'm wondering if we could get a further explanation as to why this funding would, instead of affordable housing, would also be paired in with economic development. Whether you or I see Director Chad Ronchetti is also here.
President Randorf, Councilor Wall, the thought of as to why it would be, these funds would be available, we have several pending, we could go pending tomorrow kind of projects available that would spur economic development, including housing. I mean, a lot of these dollars would be towards housing projects, part of which could be affordable. I mean, we could loop in affordable housing into those projects. But otherwise, we're going to hold on to the dollars and wait for an appropriate affordable housing project to come along. And so it's just some of its timing, some of its availability. Some of it is we can do economic development and affordable simultaneously, potentially. That's the why is, and to the broader question of, we do think ultimately economic development spurs the ability to support, not only support affordable housing, but create other opportunities for affordable housing to not have to have such a primary requirement because it creates jobs and development and economic activity so that people can be in market rate housing, for instance. So it's just, I think one of the comments made previously of, being a poor city serving poor residents, we have to be able to develop our community economically. Ultimately, the foundational issue for all of these issues is economic development, ultimately long-term. But it's $3.9 million. We think we can figure out a way to use it. We'll work with council in however council wants to move in this direction.
I may follow up. I think if that language, economic development, stays there, I would like to see language that it's a tied. Whatever economic development happens is tied to housing that has mixed units with an affordability component, or I would be amenable to removing that language completely. Because I have also heard, as Councilor Nephew mentioned, I've spoken to some community stakeholders in housing, in affordable housing, and it seems like you know, their concerns is if there's money, why not put it towards finishing up these projects that we already have funded and make sure that they're crossing over the line? And I agree with you that economic development is needed. My concern is as we continue to build, you know, our economy and our development, but we're leaving the most disenfranchised behind, then we're only just creating more wealth inequality in our city.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. We'll move on to the next question. Remember, tonight's for questions. We got Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. Thank you, administration, for bringing this forward. I think I understand the intent of moving the funds. I have similar concerns that have been shared by some of my colleagues about the OR economic development component, and actually was going to bring up the same thing about amending it and what kind of the rules are around that. But I had some other questions I wanted to start with. Just around that $3.9 million, I think, when we last had this discussion on council, and not all of us, I think only about those of us that have been here from before January were a part of the initial discussion around this, but we had a long list of applicants for some of these housing funds, the 19 or so million that we had initially, and I know we didn't award every single one of them, and so I'm wondering if some of those projects still, with that extra $3.9 million or potentially more if these other contracts don't come through, that could go towards those projects, or as Councillor Nephew had stated, if we can help the economics of these other projects that are on the verge of being able to be viable. Because I know there's a lot of need out there across multiple different projects right now.
President Randorf, Councillor Mayo, and I'll have to ask Chad Ronchetti to confirm this. First, I mean, the comments, I've heard this comment twice. I'm not aware of any specific projects right now that are in a point of being non-funded or being short on their funding. They're going, you know, the Seaway has gone through a financing issue, but I think they've resolved their financing. I'm not aware of any projects, and Chad, if you can remind me, I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but there's two issues here. There's one, is there an issue of projects that are short funding that this 3.9 could go towards, and then there's the other one about other projects that didn't make the list. Could we use this 3.9, revisit those projects, see if they're still viable? I mean, the answer to that is certainly yes. The first question I want to clarify, are you aware of any projects currently that we know of that are going to be short of funding and are going to be coming back asking for more funds?
Peter Montgomery, President Randorf, Council. I know, as far as I know, Sky Ridge Flats had a small gap. I don't think it was giant. I haven't heard back in some time involved for that gap or not. That is the only one that I am aware of that has any significant gap of one that's under construction. When it comes to the Urbane, which is the one in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, that one again is going through some financing. It's been a struggle. Trying to get financing on a building that's half built is arduous, but my understanding is they may be closing on Friday, but that's a maybe. So I don't think that's a gap issue on that one. But again, Sky Ridge Flats is the only one I know of, but I don't know of everything either.
Thank you, Director Ronchetti and Mr. Montgomery. And just to follow up to that, you had mentioned the Urbane Development, which I believe is with Merge as well, right? Is that correct, or is that separate?
Randorf, Councillor Mayo, that is correct. It is with Merge, Merge Urban Development. I will take the opportunity to say that the Residence one, which has the $4 million contract, is also with Merge. I will say I don't think that one necessarily means the other one won't get built. You know, the Urbane project specifically got wrapped up in the interest rate hikes. They started construction prior to closing on their financing. And so the interest rate hikes and the construction cost increases made that project a little more difficult. And again, they're solving for that. They're working really hard to do that. I know because I talk to them weekly. So I don't think the half-built project necessarily lends itself to say that the next one will be half built either.
Okay. Yeah.
And next in the queue is Councillor Nephew.
Thank you, President Randorf. So first I'll say I would request of the city to check in with a lot of those projects to see if there is gaps with them. I also know that there's a number of CLT houses that got state funding and still need a local match, that we can look into that because that's ownership. We haven't done a great job with that over the last years with increasing that. Councillor Forsman did message me. He apologizes for not being here tonight, but he did say that he is suggesting an amendment of economic development supporting affordable housing as maybe a compromise might be a good one. And I'll just say personally, I think I agree with him on that, that that might be a good one, but I would like to see if we could check in with some of the nonprofits and see if there is gaps out there that we could fill, because that would make a lot of sense to deal with the projects that are out there. So I'm hoping on that.
Thank you, Councillor Nephew. Councillor Owl.
To follow up on Councillor Nephew's questions, I see in the funding gaps that stepping on up, there is still about $53,000 that are left to be spent. And just curious, and then I'm also noticing that a lot of the funds were also going towards, like $200,000 of the funds were going towards homeless encampment cleanup and resources. Just curious if those are also things that we can revisit, knowing that, you know, the Stepping Up project, you know, there's state, county, local funding going into it, but what are the concerns coming up? Where can we continue to fund it? And then is it possible to continue to, I guess my question is there an issue with either tabling this resolution to have further conversation, or would you be amenable, or would DITA be amenable to that language change, the friendly amendment for the economic development?
And off, Councillor Wall, I guess I'd heard two different options. I heard one of taking out the or. I heard you also mention something about requesting that if the 3.9 million is used for economic development housing, that it would be for housing with at least a mixed income component to it. Either of those could be, you know, the one with the mixed income certainly is one that could be a workable kind of project where you mix up some income in any new housing project. So I'm not sure what specifically you're asking, because I heard a couple of different things.
Thank you so much, Councillor Owl. We'll do a follow-up question. I think now we need to turn to our attorney, Attorney Frelick. Tonight, can we just go ahead and add in the language affordable housing or economic development supporting affordable housing? Is that something we can just do now, and then when we come on Monday, it's already written?
Motion to amend would certainly be appropriate at this point if brought and voted by the and supported by the majority. But I don't know that that necessarily has to be done on Monday. I believe that the council could make a motion to amend at this juncture under Robert's rules if it's something that the council is considering. It is a I don't know that this has ever been done that way, but I don't think that there's anything that says you can't do it that way. Certainly a motion to amend that the council would want to consider debate on would be available for you on Monday.
And so the question for you is, we're not able to just ask, if we ask right now, seeing that this is something we want, instead of voting on it, if we ask administration to make that change, is that something you can just make for us?
Yes, if we're proceeding by simply amending the resolution for consideration on Monday, that is something that can be done in the interim so that the resolution is worded in the manner that you're requesting for Monday's agenda without voting. That would be something then that would have to be considered by, so it's a request from council to administration to consider amending the resolution that they are putting forward. That would be done and be ready to go for the council on Monday.
Thank you. We'll continue with questions and see where we want to go with this. The next in the queue is Councillor Kennedy.
Thank you, President Randolph. I have a couple of questions. When is the deadline for this to happen before the money would not be able to be used?
President Randolph, Councillor Kennedy, as Administrator Montgomery previously mentioned, we have to spend or obligate the American Rescue Plan dollars by year end 24. So spend or obligate, have a contract in place, or the cash has to be out the door by 12/31/26. So if we do not act before year end and we don't have existing contracts in place for our ARPA dollars, we would have to return those.
I have a follow-up question. So it sounds like we have some time, so this could be pulled and it would not affect any projects. My other question would be is, why don't we just pull this, if I may, is it okay if we pull this amendment for more discussion with counselors who maybe aren't in the room? It sounds like we're all sort of in the same agreement. If we could just coalesce around that and just make a decision, because we can do the amendments. We don't have to do it right now, right away, because that gets clunky. And it sounds like we all want to have more conversation. So if we just, even if we just pull it off the agenda for Monday, still have your discussions, there might be amendments, and it sounds like we have time. That may, if you give me a head shake, it came out as a question and not sort of a, let's do this. Here's a strategy.
Go ahead, Mr. Montgomery.
President Randolph, Councilor Kennedy, council can choose to not put this on the agenda tonight, essentially not put it on, pull it. I think we have time. We have to make sure we get this done before year end, obviously. We have time to deal with it. Certainly, we want to figure out where these different dollars are and where we want them to go or potentially go. So we're okay if council wants more time to kind of more thoughtfully think through this without a resolution hanging over your head, and then circle it back and bring it on the next meeting or two. I think that we'd be okay with that.
Thank you so much, Mr. Montgomery. Councilor Owl.
My question was what Councilor Kennedy asked. Is there going to be an issue to pull it and potentially table it? So I will take back my question.
Next in the queue is Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. Just a quick follow-up on the original intent of the ARPA funds when we allocated them as a city years ago. Are there any implications around us potentially opening that up, with economic development being mentioned in this? And it was originally, I think, that pot for affordable housing solely. Did we communicate with the federal government at any point to say, here's our plan, do you approve it? Or did they just give us guidelines to operate within and local governments are allowed to change that as we move through these years?
President Randolph, Councilor Mayo. Yeah, I think you're on the path. Council passed this in 2021. This was their recommendation for how these funds would be spent. The ultimate guidelines come from the ARPA rules, and they morphed and changed and did a lot of things between then and now. But we have the flexibility. That prior resolution can be changed by this council. I mean, no council can really hold any future council. But under ARPA, one of the main reasons this works is because city municipalities, ARPA was intended to be a revenue replacement concept, and that's how this would work. We would move the money to DITA. We now have a revenue shortfall, therefore we can use ARPA funds to fill that shortfall. And we're really just swapping ARPA funds for general funds. So yes, we have flexibility to do this. We have flexibility to change what these funds are used for. We have very broad capabilities under ARPA to spend ARPA dollars. It can be housing, it can be infrastructure, it can be all sorts of things. So we have that flexibility.
That moves to DITA. DITA is under the same, they're not under the same rules anymore. Okay, that vanishes.
Because what we're doing is the city is basically converting the ARPA dollars to general fund dollars as it relates to DITA. The city now still has those ARPA funds And the expenditure is essentially the transfer to DITA for those purposes to supplant the lost revenue by giving that, you know, we send the money to DITA, the city now has lost revenue.
The final report.
Revenue, we can use ARPA funds to fill the hole created by lost revenue.
Thanks for the clarification. Yep.
Thank you so much, Councillor Mayo. Councillor Owl.
About the chart from finance that kind of breaks down the availability. And then I had also requested the 2021 resolution because it was a little tricky to find it. I was wondering if that could be sent to council so that that information could also make it to public as well.
President Randolph, Councillor Wall, I will talk to finance about that and we'll make sure it's presentable and we can route it to you.
Councillor Owl, any final questions on those items 13 through 15? Okay, seeing none, what I will do is I'm going to lean into Rule 20, and I, as a presiding officer, I'm going to pull item 14 from the agenda, recommending that, city administration, it sounds like the majority of us want this rewritten. So I'd like to see administration rewrite this for us, including affordable housing or economic development supporting affordable housing. And if done so, then we can vote on that. And if not, we can amend at that time. How does that sound, Mr. Montgomery?
President Randolph, we can work with you on that. Thanks.
All right. We're going to move on to... we did not. So Councillor Swenson, that's where we're at. Item 16, please.
Number 16, resolution 274, resolution authorizing proper city officials to accept a $42,543 grant award from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety Office of Justice Programs to be used to reimburse the Duluth Police Department for the 50% of the wages paid to community service officers participating in the Pathway to Policing program.
Thank you, Councillor Swenson. Any questions on item 16? Seeing none, we'll move on. Next is Public Works and Utilities, Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. Item 17, Resolution 263 is awarding a contract to Euland Brothers Incorporated for the 2024 Street Preservation Project, City Project Number 2090, in the amount of $8,181,240. Item 18, Resolution 269 is authorizing an amendment to the agreement L30885 with MSA Professional Services Incorporated for additional engineering services, including survey, layout, construction, administration, and inspection services for the 2024 Street Preservation Project to increase the amount by $619,880.53 for a new total of $989,622.23. Item 19, Resolution 271 is awarding a contract to JMF Construction Incorporated for the 2024 citywide patch and sidewalk project in the amount of $230,635.14. Item 20, Resolution 273 is to temporarily establish permanent permit application fees related to lead service line replacements. And if I may, Councillor Randolph, just wanted to comment. I appreciate Mr. Montgomery, you providing us with some additional context and forewarning about the street preservation project. And it's great to see, I think, an expansive stretch of the city from east to west and everywhere in between being included in that, including some really needed roads, Old Howard Mill Road being one of them in my district. Is there any additional context you can provide us around, are we doing more streets this year than we did in 2023? Is this amount kind of on par with what we usually do for city street preservation?
President Randolph, Councillor Mayo, we're doing significantly more streets, more miles this year. We did 3.7 miles in 2023. Comparable amounts the last couple of years before that. We're doing 13.7 this year. We spent $3.4 million in 2023. We're spending $8.2 million this year. So it's a significant increase. It's a good step forward. You know, this is one of the priorities is streets and targeting that approach and meeting that obligation we've taken on.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Next in the queue is Councilor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. I'm just curious a little bit about the history of these entities that we're contracting. Were there RFPs issued or specifically the 263? Have we used Ulan Brothers before?
President Randorf, Councilor Derwachter, yeah, we do RFPs every year for these projects, and our street preservation project is usually a pretty big project. Years back, pre-COVID, back in prior years, we had many more eligible contractors than we do now. Ulan Brothers, we've done a lot of work with them. Northland Contractors, we also do a lot with them. Those were the two bidders here. Ulan Brothers got it. They're very familiar with the work we do and with our streets. We always do RFPs. We'd love to have more capable contractors to spread the work around, but there's been consolidation in this part of the world with contractors, so we usually just get two or three on any of these projects. And the demand, I mean, with ARPA dollars and stuff, the county's consuming a lot of contractor time, the state, entities around the region, the whole state. It's just a lot of construction is going on in the state that we're trying to find time to get our stuff done too.
So Derwachter, next in the queue is Councilor Swenson.
Randorf, on number 19, resolution 273, this is about the lead replacement. My question is around the permitting process. And so who is going to be pulling the permits, and will that be really a barrier to the residents that are getting the lead replacement of the potential $50?
President Randorf, Councilor Swenson, great question. We've really streamlined it beyond just reducing the fees. The contractor is going to be handling the entire permit process. For each residence that they're doing, they will pull the permits, they will take care of it, they'll pay the fee. The homeowners will have to do nothing because we did recognize even the paperwork aspect could be a barrier, much like, you know, the dollars we took down to de minimis, but just the paperwork. And we didn't want coming up to a house that they just didn't get around to it yet. And then we'd have to say, well, we'll see you next week or we're gonna miss you. So contractors doing it all, nothing to do with any homeowner there. It's completely hands-off turnkey for them.
Thank you, Councilor Swenson. Next in the queue is Councilor Nephew. Oh, Councilor Mayo, thanks.
Thank you, President Randorf. Question back on the street projects again, actually in tying into the lead lines. When we do these streets, I'm assuming they're mostly mill and overlay. Do you know of any of these streets that are going to be more than just a basic mill and overlay that we're doing utilities on? And do we kind of have that, I believe we passed a dig once policy last year, more related to broadband, but does that same standard apply to the lead line projects?
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, I mean, we're going to be very careful coordinating on the lead line so that we're not tearing up new streets to put in the lead lines. So no, most of these are mill and overlay. I'd have to check with engineering. There might be a couple of full reconstructs in here. If Eklund is on the list, I think Eklund is going to be a full reconstruct, for instance. And that is a thing we are looking at as we go forward. I mean, mill and overlays are Band-Aids. Take a real crummy street, we clean it up a little bit and hopefully get 5 to 7 more years out of it. We're going to be looking at how we may be moving more of our focus to give up on just the miles, which were sort of a measure of how much road you were doing, and move to a little bit of a qualitative approach. Because if we can do a full reconstruct on some roads and then maintain them afterwards, you know, then properly maintain them and care for them afterwards, now you're talking 20 to 25 years. It's a slower process to get through, but all the rest of these are just Band-Aids, and you may be doing a mill and overlay 2 or 3 times. So we're going to try to vary the mix as we go forward, and then look for more avenues for funding to enable us to do more of them, because they are significantly more expensive than the mill and overlays.
Thank you.
Councillor Derwachter, I had you in the queue.
I didn't mean to.
Those items, 17 through 20, seeing none, we'll move on. Recreation, Libraries, and Authorities, Councillor Owl.
Thank you, Randolph. Item 21, Resolution 215, resolution authorizing an agreement with AstroTurf Corporation for brown turf replacement at the Wade Stadium for a total not to exceed $261,836. Item 22, resolution 265, resolution authorizing a contract for services with the Duluth Area Family YMCA for an amount not to exceed $51,474.93 for lifeguarding services provided at the seats at the city's Park Point Beach House and Recreation Area during the 2024 operating season. Item 23, resolution 267, resolution authorizing a second amendment to the development agreement with Hartley Nature Center Corporation for expansion of the building leased by the corporation and improvements of the park amenities. Item 24, resolution 270, resolution authorizing a 3-year lease agreement with Plant a Lot Community Garden Program, DBA Duluth Community Garden Program, for use of multiple recreational, multiple vacant real properties to operate its community garden program.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Any questions on those items? Yes, I've got Councillor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randolph. I have two questions. Just curious, the lifeguard at Park Point, if you could just clarify, that's a thing we do every year, is that correct?
President Randolph, Councillor Derwachter, yes, this the YMCA has been a great partner down at Park Point, and this is a similar contract that we do every year.
And then, if I may ask one more question about the Wade Stadium, my memory is that there was grass. This is not a replacement of AstroTurf, correct? It's transitioning to AstroTurf?
President Randolph, Councillor Derwachter, no, I think I was here, it was 10 years ago or so, 10 or 11 years ago, so it was kind of at the tail end of when I was here. Had all sorts of issues with the grass. There used to be grass and dirt out there, and had huge problems with it, and including the fact that you couldn't start the season until the thaw and the melt and everything happened, so it was limiting the use. So we put in turf, outfield, infield, everywhere. That turf had about a 10 to 12 year useful life, and the part we're replacing, we are now at that 10 to 12 year timeline, and it's the infield, the part that gets the most heavy use, running the base pass and the activity of the infield area. So that's the part that's being replaced here. Again, most of it has a 10-year life, but especially the infield takes a real beating.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much, Councillor Derwachter. Any final questions on those items? You'll see you're in the queue. Were you out of the queue? Okay, sounds good. Then we'll move on to item 25. Councillor Nephew.
Item number 25, 24-001-0, ordinance to rename platted James Street to Catherine Lane. Item number 26, 24-006, an ordinance granting Armory Arts and Music Center a concurrent use permit for a stoop along 13th Avenue East.
Thank you, Councillor. Any questions on 25 and 26? Seeing none, we'll move on. Public Safety, items 27 and 28. Councillor Swenson.
24-005, ordinance amending Chapter 49, Article 1, Section 49 through 4 of the Duluth City Code to include the use of a crossbow as authorized by the city's agent. Number 28-24-004, ordinance amending Chapter 6, Article 7, Section 6 through 77 of the Duluth City Code to clarify when hunting with a crossbow is allowed.
Thank you, Councillor Swenson. In the queue is Councillor Owl.
Superintendent Randorf, I was just curious, about the renaming of James Street to Catherine Lane. Is there any context behind that? I'm not really sensing anything from the resolution text. I was just wondering if there was an interesting story behind it.
Randolph, Councillor Wall, I'm sure there is, but I don't know it. But I will find out and we'll send something around tomorrow that clarifies what the underlying purpose of this name change is. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Any final questions? Seeing none, that's our agenda session. We will reconvene on Monday, April 8th at 6:15. We're going to hear from Ann Glumack for a Committee of the Whole on Spirit Mountain budget. See you then.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. We're not going to open it up.